Hello, welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast. What's happening, people? Thanks for joining us on this week's pod. I'm going to do the shout out to our socials first this week because I do it last normally, and you guys have been getting a bit slack on the socials. So if you're not following us already, please do so across our Instagram page, our Facebook page, and our Twitter page as well. Our Twitter handle is Football Fans Pod. We're on Instagram as Football Fans Podcast and on Facebook, Football Fans Podcast. On the pod this week, we're joined by Arsenal fan Basil and United fan Michael. How you doing, boys? You're both feeling crap, basically, aren't you?
I'm alive.
You're alive. Is that how bad it's gone?
Yeah. Could be worse, you know.
Basil? I don't even have enough words to describe. I mean, it started off first mocking United fans. I mean, it started off with me then hiding in my cave afterwards because of that poor performance, but...
See, for once, I actually held my tongue during the United game because normally I run it up and then I regret it later on. I actually held my tongue this time because I had a feeling and it was proven right. But we'll get there anyway. And we've also got Marissa, who also supports Arsenal, making her debut on the show. How are you, Marissa?
Hello, not bad. Thanks, Jordan.
Was your Sunday better than our Sunday?
Yeah, I kind of knew it was coming, so I wasn't that surprised.
You're prepared for it.
I was prepared,
yeah. Okay. G's here too. This week on the show, we're going to chat about how well the Premier League clubs and managers have done developing and coaching some of the young talent in the league. Also, after a disastrous middle part of the season, will Chelsea and Sarri have the last laugh? And I'll be asking if relegating the bottom five teams from the Premier League would raise the standard of football at the bottom end of the table. But first, no drive-bys this week, guys. A couple of quick talking points I wanted to briefly skimp through. We will do Arsenal or United because they're actually worse and more so United than I actually thought. And we'll get there in a minute. But first, I want to just chat to you guys about the incident that happened at Tottenham in their Champions League game regarding Yang Vertonghen, who suffered a head injury. The Spurs also say it wasn't concussion and they follow full protocol, but it did look quite bad and distressing. And I'm just wondering if it's time these decisions were either taken out of the hands of the players, and sorry, the club medics, or if the rules just need to be tweaked. Start with you, Basil. What did you first of all make of the incident, and do you feel they need to just maybe change the rules or just make it so that there's an independent doctor now going forward?
It's difficult to change rules because in that time moment, it's difficult to truly assess the extent of the damage when that truly occurs. I mean, initially when you saw Vertonghen on the floor, he was absolutely laid out. So you knew straight away he probably wasn't going to be able to continue. But at the same time, I do think when you assess the player, the decision is sometimes in the hands of a player, mm-hmm. where they ask him certain questions or assess him, and he sort of gives the okay that he's ready to go on the pitch. And I think sometimes we probably need to take away that power from the player, because in such an important game, a player doesn't want to come off the pitch. Even if they know the extent of the injury is quite bad, mm-hmm. they definitely will try everything possible to come back onto that pitch and play that game. And I was surprised he actually came back on, if I'm being brutally honest. Just you saw the length of time mm-hmm. it took to actually try and sort him out or try and assess mm-hmm. what was happening to him. And I was surprised they let him back on the pitch.
Michael, do you think players have to take control of this as opposed to the authorities? Because it's ultimately their health on the line here. So the players have to say, look, yeah, this it's our call, or no, take it out of our hands. Because it's there. If they want to still play on, knowing that there potentially could be long-term implications, then that's on you. You as the players, for example, the union, have told us you want the final say, cool. But then when you develop brain damage 10 years later, don't blame us because it was your call. Do you know what I mean?
It's still very risky for the club to go along with those kind of lines. I'd say
there's probably legal implications there.
I'd say I wouldn't leave it in the hands of the players, because there's been times in the past, not even just with concussion, just with any sort of injury, a player will tell they're okay and they run on, and then within a minute or two they're on the floor because they can't continue. Mm. But a lot of players do that because of they feel like the game is a big game and they don't want to come off the pitch, or they feel like they're very important, but your career long term is much more important than that one game on that day. Mm. So a lot of players don't tend to think about the long term, they think about the here and now, and I don't think that's a smart way to think about it, so I wouldn't leave it in their hands at all.
Marissa, should they just maybe make a rule now where if you have a head injury and you go down because of a head collision, it's just, there's no ambiguity, you're taken off. It's different if you are injured because of a slide tackle, or I don't know, you've knocked knees and you've got, you know, a dead leg or something. If there is any kind of head collision between two players and you're down, you're off.
Yeah.
Do you know, just be as black and white as that?
I think so, because as I said, the players are on adrenaline, they want to stay on. It's not good there could be long-term implications for them. They stay on that one game and might start feeling headaches later on. You know, it's just the brain, the head, it's very risky to keep them on and see what happens. Mm. When just head-to-head is not good. Look, Ryan Mason, that ended his career, that skull collision with Gary Cahill. So
I'm talking about literally any head, even if it's like two heads collide and a guy's down for like 20 seconds and he's up again. That's just 20 seconds too long. Yeah. Take him off.
Yeah, cut it out completely. Don't want that head-to-head collision at all. Don't know what can happen later on. So any sort of head collision, I think just take them off straight away.
G, do you agree? I mean, some people would say, you know, when you contest a header from a corner, there's a likelihood that you're going to clash heads. And, you know, but I'm trying to work out at what point do you decide a head collision, how soft or how hard, determines whether someone should come off the pitch?
Well, you can't. I guess only the individual and the medical professional does know. I wouldn't be for just any clash of heads. I know kind of boxing's a different sport, but a boxer can take many shots to the head and still perform over various rounds. Like, everyone has a different pain threshold or ability. I think there should be some tests that a doctor's able to do, or, you know, I know it sounds quite basic, but how many fingers have I holding? Well, something like that, where
I think they do
where
that.
There could be an objective decision as to whether the person is in trouble or not. But yeah, I don't know about just any head collision, because sometimes you can be okay and the thing is with concussion, it's so difficult, because sometimes, even from what I hear from medical professionals, you don't actually know the full extent of a concussion until a couple of days after. So it is really difficult. I think another thing that maybe you haven't kind of touched on, but it's quite important, is maybe the attitude towards it. And I guess kind of like with football being a quote-unquote masculine game, people have always kind of had this, you just play on, get your head there, put your body on the line, all those type of attitudes. I think I was thinking about when this happened, and I was thinking about Karius. And we all mocked Karius. We killed him.
Yeah.
I mean, it actually came out that he did have concussion, medically proven. And the record has never been put straight. Even now, people talk about it and say, you know,
he's laughing.
He messed up the championship. Yeah, yeah, and his career would never be the same. So I think there is something about the attitude that needs to change, which then will maybe filter into some of the players, so they won't have to feel they need to be tough and strong and continue and be like the Terry Butcher from the 70s with a bandage around there. They might actually get on and think, okay, I need to take care of myself.
And you also mentioned the masculinity element of it. I mean, no one's mentioned that your former physio, Eva Caneiro, she did her job. She was doing her job, but she was overruled by a manager in terms of what she was supposed to do. And is there a dangerous narrative that even when the medics are advising this guy needs some help, that football is still put over the well-being of the players?
But that's something that's happened in football generally, not just with head injuries. You know, people take injections and play games when they probably would be best. It's very hard. I think it's important that doctors have a good relationship with management so that they can kind of make that point. I think that, going back to Eva, that was the problem, that she didn't have a good relationship with Jose. And from what I understand, certain people amongst the club felt that she would run on the pitch for her own profile rather than for the good of the players. But that's a different debate.
We've had that one.
But overall, I think clubs, even if it's gone above the manager's head, should empower medical staff to be able to have a call. And when it comes to things
Have independence, just have an every single game, you have two doctors who are independent of either club, and they come on and make the call. Yeah. And you're not for that.
You know what? As you say, it sounds like a good idea. But I can just see that being controversial as well. Could you imagine an independent person takes off someone's player,
and then someone says, when they need a goal.
Yeah, then someone says, it's a conspiracy. The doctors have been bought. We need VAR. There's always going to be something, right?
Fair enough. And just briefly, we did United and Arsenal last week. We asked the question, who has the bigger summer ahead of them? We had a good time. Bigger decade ahead of them, Michael, so your team drew with Huddersfield yesterday, and my club, Arsenal, drew with Brighton. And Arsenal got problems that I think have been endemic for about a decade. But I think United in some ways have a bigger problem because I don't see any direction at your club. And unlike Arsenal, where we've been in this situation for a decade, you're going into uncharted territory of where there could be a decade before you see a Prem. It could be a decade before you see another Premier League in terms of the 6 years they've gone by so far, another 4 or 5 years. You know what I mean? That game was concerning because you'd have thought, you know, there's still a slim chance of top four, even though I think we all think, you know, they're gone. But even for pride, you've got to go and beat Huddersfield. And when in fact you didn't beat them, you didn't even look like the better team. Are you seriously concerned about the next 6 to 12 months for your club?
I've been concerned ever since the day we signed David Moyes, man. So, you know, I mean, this is a whole new level of concern. What annoyed me about that game, just quickly, is that we were in control of the game and all it took was a long ball from a corner that we took. And it's a goal, just like that. And the guy's been there for 5 months and that's when he decided to score his first ever goal. And not only that, to make us look even more funny and for Huddersfield to mock us even more, the guy kicked the corner flag off clean. So we spent 5 minutes standing around just thinking, when is this ever going
to
end?
To stew on it.
And it was at a time of 8 minutes of utter nonsense. So all in all, I'm stressing out big time. You can't beat a team that's bottom of the league.
Yeah.
A team that's being compared to Derby that got 11 points.
That's pretty bad.
That's my team.
Basil, Marissa, I'll just briefly on Arsenal. They did have a strong chance of still being in the fight for a top four spot. Forget the fact that the top four's gone, but again, not even being able to be at home. Arsenal were at home in their game. How concerned are you for Arsenal kind of going forward? And what does drawing against Brighton say to you about where this club is? Is it as simple as the players aren't good enough, or are there bigger issues that need to be addressed there for you?
Probably bigger issues because this has been going on for years, even under Wenger. Arsenal are just soft these days. But at home, we've had such a good record this season until losing against Crystal Palace and then this one against Brighton. You thought maybe for pride, you know, personal pride, they'd lost like 3-4 games in a row. Mm-hmm. And then sort of Brighton, they just about managed to survive.
They didn't have to play for.
Exactly.
And they still got a draw.
And still Arsenal can't even score 2 goals. Aubameyang scored one, but then missed another sitter.
Yeah. Was that word? Another sitter, did you say?
Another
one, yeah. Okay.
Another one. This is a regular theme.
I was just checking because, there's a conspiracy coming from me that I hate Aubameyang, but as long as you think it's another one, okay.
You're correct about Aubameyang.
I know this, but at the time people say I'm rubbish.
Agenda's coming through.
It's my club. I want him to score off. Basil, has he improved Arsenal in the year that he's been there? I mean, there's still a final to come, so we'll see if there's a trophy at the end of it and Champions League football. But up until this point, can you say this year so far has been a better year than last season?
I wouldn't say so. I think there's been a lot of deception. I think the beginning was very deceiving and really pulled the wool over our eyes. And I think when it comes to crunch time, it showed me that Emery isn't up to the task. I mean, when at Crystal Palace, where we needed a victory, decided to play people like Elneny, give the Greek player Mavropoulos he gave all these fringe players a chance at Crystal Palace. And I was like, knowing our history, we've always struggled against Crystal Palace. And secondly, Tottenham lost, so we had to win the game. Mm. And secondly, I think he struggles to adapt in games when the game isn't going our way. And even our substitution in our last game, where he brought on Iwobi, Guendouzi and Kolasinac, I didn't know what he was doing.
So on the first thing, second thing actually, do you not feel that he was vindicated in making those changes against Palace by then going on to beat Valencia 3-1?
No, because I think he should have started with a strong team and then taken players off just to ensure that he got the victory. I think he disrespected Crystal Palace, who always give us trouble. Mm-hmm. And a man, Emery, knowing how the season has gone, should know better than that. And then obviously we saw what happened in the games against Wolves and Leicester. And that's the reason why I'm in position, because you look at the goal difference now, where there's an eight goal swing between Arsenal and Tottenham, and it's because of those games, which is why in the last game, we don't have a chance whatsoever, in my opinion. Mm. But I think, I wouldn't mind if come this time of the season we weren't in that position anyway. I would have said, well, we know it's a stepping stone. We know there's things to be worked out Arsenal. But I think circumstance comes into play here. When you put yourself in a position where you've been given four separate opportunities to sort of put yourself amongst the top four, and you don't take advantage of that, I start to question the manager. Obviously, there's bigger issues with the players and the owner himself, who is the biggest issue of it of them all. But I feel like he's won games against the likes of Tottenham, Man United, Chelsea, so he should have been able to have...
And also, just to kind of reply to your point about he's not been able to change games in-game, I disagree with that. I think there's been lots of games where we've been awful in the first half, and his tactical changes have actually and substitutions have actually won games in the second half for us.
I think he was blagging it in the beginning. That's what I honestly feel. Because when you look at...
Of the season or of the games?
In those early games. I think when you look at the second half of the season, you realise he's thrown on plays, but he doesn't... There's no tactical structure as to what Arsenal should be doing 100%. On that pitch. And that's what was worrying to me as the second half of the season sort of...
So the Spurs game, I don't have to do to Arsenal for too long, but the Spurs game, for example, where we won 4-2? That's a game where at half time his tactics won the game.
Fair enough, yeah. But I think overall,
not been impressed.
Haven't been impressed. There's a few games where, yes, he has. There's a few games where I feel the game has just played out in our way, in our favour. And there's a lot of games where I've seen, like, I don't think he has a clue what he's doing tactically as the game is going on.
It seems like a lot of substitutions for the sake of substitutions. Yeah. I mean, if the guy ends up scoring, he's a genius. It's not always the case, right?
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer brought on Tadic Chong.
But to be fair, at that point, you're thinking Chong's got a future next year at United. Certain players haven't. You might as well just bring him on and give him some minutes now ahead of next season.
I just want to win.
But your chances are better with Chong than Sanchez. But,
yeah, can I make...
That's a good point.
I think there's big issues at Arsenal quickly because, one, we have to offload players because we've already seen these players aren't good enough. But the biggest issue is that even if we do that, there's no money to actually bring in players, which is the biggest issue at Arsenal.
That is true. That is a bit concerning. We'll do Chelsea later on the show, G, but I'll just ask you a question briefly about the top two. Mm-hmm. As we're recording this, City are going to be kicking off in about half an hour against Leicester. So by the time people hear this podcast, we will know if Liverpool can win the league or not, because if City drop points...
But Liverpool still have Wolves.
Yeah, but you think if City drop points tonight, Liverpool are not going to not win against Wolves?
I think Wolves will be up for it.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so. But G, do you think City will get the job done tonight? And if they don't, do you agree with Basil that that won't be the title wrapped up because Liverpool still got quite a tricky game against Wolves on the weekend?
Yeah, I don't think anything will be decided tonight, but I do think City will get the job done tonight.
Okay.
People are looking at Leicester as a potential banana sleep. I actually look at that as a nice game for City.
Because they like to play,
and I think City will play better than them and beat them. Now, who famous last words, I could be wrong. But I think City will get the job done. And as we're probably all mostly hoping, I think they'll get the job done overall.
Everyone apart from Josh, our tech op, controlling things.
There's a few Liverpool fans who say they're buying Liverpool shirts with their name Vardy at the back of their...
Oh, wow. That's such a Liverpool thing.
This thing where they had pictures of John Barnes as their... Not John Barnes, Ashley Barnes as their Twitter. It's going crazy.
Okay, let's move on now, guys. Get to the first topic of the pod. Let's start with relegation talk. I'm thinking that there have been some awful teams in the league this season, and I was thinking of ways a few weeks ago about how we can... I appreciate everyone can't be a great team. You can't have 20 great teams. That's not how a league works. Someone's got to be the worst team. But there's bad and there's really, really bad. So I was thinking, okay, how about as an incentive for the lesser teams or the smaller teams with lesser players to be better, to say, right, we're going to relegate five teams and four come up from the Championship and the fifth team in the Championship has a playoff against the fifth bottom in the Premier League. Because that may, if five teams go down and you know that, if you're Huddersfield, if you're Cardiff, I'm thinking, one, you have to spend money. But two, you've got to spend it well because you can't just play defensive football and try and get a point. You've got to try and get wins because five teams. Is this a really, really crap idea, Michael? Don't be polite. If it's a crap idea, you can say it's a crap idea.
I think it's a bad idea, man.
Go on.
Because what you said about bad teams is my biggest fear. If it was four poor teams going down, my biggest fear is another four teams coming up and wasting my time. I mean, this season really good. Like Norwich and Sheffield United are coming up. Sheffield United should not have been coming up in the first place. Leeds bottled it.
Yeah.
Now, I know for a fact that Sheffield United are going to come stink the place out and go back down. Whereas with Leeds, we had a manager that has a reputation, sort of like what Wolves did with Nuno. So you have someone that knows this football, someone that has a reputation around the world, so it can maybe attract bigger name players to help the team improve. My biggest fear with someone like Sheffield United is we're going to go back to the 2008 days where a team came up and said we're going to sign players with Premier League experience because they've been here before, even though they got relegated the previous season. But you know, that's actually a fear of mine. I get worried when teams come up because apart from Wolves, I haven't really can't think of a team that's come up in the last 5 years that I've looked at and said, I'm sure you'll be okay. I mean, Bournemouth are the only team that I wasn't sure about, but they've played their football, they've been all right. But even then, they've bought poorly. And at some point, I think they're going to suffer.
I'm going to feel it.
Yeah.
Marissa, Huddersfield, they've got 10 goals at home, 15 points, which is only four more than the record low of Derby.
1 point against United.
I was getting there.
Why, man?
Three wins. I mean, that's bad, man. And I just feel Huddersfield have just been on this thing of, we're in the Premier League, second year, blah, blah, blah. But if they're finished bottoms, maybe they're the worst example. But I just don't want to see any more teams like that. And I just feel that an incentive to make teams try and score more goals and try and get more wins, you might lose, but try and get wins, might act as a deterrent for being so stinky and nasty and rubbish, which is what Huddersfield and Cardiff were. You know what I mean? Do you agree with Michael that it won't work, or do you think it's just something that we should be looking into to try and motivate the teams, the bottom end, to actually try and play some ball and try and get some wins?
I think there needs to be some sort of shake-up because the Premier League's just becoming stale now. You kind of know the top six, middle, sort of defined, and then bottom. Like, it's three different leagues, really.
Yeah.
I like the playoff idea, something a bit different, just shake it up, get some more teams, as you said, trying to score more goals. Huddersfield just had an awful season.
They're not even trying.
Yeah, but they're just happy to be there.
Yeah.
You should just be happy to
that.
Be in the Premier League.
I hate that.
Want to win some matches, you know, really make your statement in that league. Even if you go down, you say, we had a few good wins, we've made something happen. Huddersfield have just been there.
They have. They've just been a team in the league.
Their nickname is the Terriers. We haven't seen that.
No one's terrified. No one is terrified.
No one's scared of Huddersfield. So something has to be done. I think the playoff idea, just give it something else to go on, you know. Something else to look forward to maybe at the end of the season. The same when the Championship has the playoffs. Premier League has some playoffs. Get something else going with the Premier League.
You know what I think will help the Championship?
Go
sort
on.
Of like, so how the channels now are dedicating channels to a league, or so like Sky Sports has Sky Sports Premier League on top of maybe
giving their own channel.
Yes, because you got Sky Sports Football, but that's just like a free for
all.
It's like oh, you know what, Barnsley, we're picking you for this weekend. You know, give them a channel, because if you give them a channel, obviously the issue was back in the day we didn't have this kind of stuff, so lower league clubs would have to wait for their moment to hope that their team was going to be on TV. It was BBC or something. But now you've got the opportunity. I know it takes money from people, but that's what they do anyway. You know, open up a channel for them and dedicate some Championship football, or maybe League One, League Two, to that demographic.
So what, you think that will make them want to play better?
I know, I think in terms of pouring money, even TV deals all that, because all the money's going into the Premier League, and obviously the big boys benefit from it the most. So if you open it up a bit more, from money to the teams in the Championship.
Okay, so let's say a Championship team, Basil, on Michael's idea there. Let's say I don't know, Derby had, or that league had its own channel and there was more money, and Derby could afford to pay Premier League ish wages.
Yeah.
Would a Premier League player still go there? Is the champ? Some might, but I'm just thinking, will they still go there?
They would if the money was enticing enough.
Even if it means going to a Championship club,
because they know they can still earn a decent living, and that's the reason why you have a lot of players remaining with these Premier League teams at the bottom half just for the wages. They're not, because for me, the most damning moment was when a friend said to me, oh, Huddersfield are going down. Usually when a team goes down, you can name two or three players who you could say, you know what, could possibly remain in the Premier League. He asked me to name two players from Huddersfield, and I couldn't name him two players from Huddersfield.
Wow.
Because I don't, like I said, I never pay attention, because their football is, it's horrible. They definitely shouldn't have stayed up last season. And we all knew this moment was coming. And I think the issue with, let's say, the bottom six in the Premier League is that they play defensive. They're just organised to not lose games. and ultimately it's going to catch up on you, because when things don't go your way and you're now looking for goals, where is it going to come from?
Burnley, though, to be fair, would say it worked for us.
Yeah, but Burnley is the exception. Burnley just defend badly. So there isn't that balance there. A team like, I looked at Brighton too, and I love Chris Hughton, but I think give them within the next two seasons, I think Brighton are going down because they set up not to lose, and that can only take you so far.
So do you think, if he does know that, do you think next season he might decide, look, I've got to change up a little bit?
I don't
now.
Think so, because they signed that striker. I've completely forgotten his name now.
With the long name.
Lacardia. And before Lacardia came, he was a very good player, but okay. He's not getting games because he doesn't suit the system. Yeah. I'm like, those are the they're still playing Glenn Murray. Those are the type of players who will move the club forward, change the style, utilize them a bit more. But because they're so archaic in the way they sort of structure the team to play, it doesn't work. So you're still having Glenn Murray, who's just there, penalties, fling the ball into the box, hopefully he gets a header.
Respect Glenn Murray. Glenn Murray's a decent finisher, you know.
He does his job.
That's a good 10 goals there.
It's a very one-dimensional style of play. And like I said, I wouldn't watch teams like Brighton, teams like Huddersfield. Fulham, I generally wouldn't watch Fulham just because they're very leaky in defence. Mm. Yes, they may look pleasing to the eye, but I don't want to see teams conceding three or four goals in certain matches.
Would you reckon, G? Do you think that incentivising better teams trying to win more games and play... Even the better football thing is arguable, because some fans would say, we don't care about good football. We'd rather... Burnley would say, well, we're still in the Prem, but the football's not good, but we're still in the Prem. Mm. So even putting the good football to one side for a second, can you think of any ways of incentivising the teams at the bottom of the table to try and go for more wins, to make the product of the Premier League a bit better? Because Huddersfield have been... Even Cardiff have given it a go. Yeah. Cardiff are bad, but even they've given it a go. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Huddersfield are just... 10 goals at home.
Yeah.
10!
George, you know what? I hear totally what you're saying, but I don't know what the answer is. I don't want a 15 from the Championship, because then you'll get a Middlesbrough or a Pulis or someone like that. So I don't want that. I don't know whether it's take away the parachute payments, because some teams kind of go, you know, get a bit comfortable and think, okay, well, we're going down, but we don't, you know, the West Brom type of yo-yo type thing, and they don't mind going down because financially they'll be okay. Maybe take away that or reduce that. Although on the other side of it, I know it can financially cripple clubs when they do it. But yeah, George, like, honestly, like, echoing what everyone else said, like, just sometimes what there used to be times when I would watch a mid/lower Premier League club and just think, okay, this would be something different from watching the top four. They'd be exciting. Teams used to go for it to a certain extent. You know, remember Tottenham used to be down there and
the good days. You
know, I mean, remember, I always go back to like Ian Holloway's Blackpool.
Yeah.
And they came up and they tried to play.
Tried a little team. They got battered, but they tried a little team.
Exactly. And the thing is, they could have stayed up on the last day if Man United had, you know, done them a favour. You know? Like they tried to do for Huddersfield. So, yeah, I think it's... what I'd hope is that over time, I mean, if you look at the way like Pep and Klopp, and hopefully that style of football, if it becomes successful and if more teams get better playing that way, I hope that filters down a bit.
I think it kind of is already.
Yeah, not to Huddersfield.
No, it hasn't got that far yet. But yeah. I think you've got mid-table teams now that are trying to play from the back, goalkeepers.
Yeah, high pressing. Yeah, and I think hopefully people will see that works. And try to play that, but yeah, doing like something radical like a playoff, I think we're just going to replace rubbish with more rubbish.
I think money should come into it. They should look at a way that you're not receiving a certain amount of payment if your appeal isn't that great for the Premier League advert. So obviously, I don't know how they would assess it, but assess sort of how a team plays in the lower league, how much appeal they're bringing to the Premier League based on...
Yeah, but how do you measure that? How do you say, if you have to score 50 goals to get 30 million?
Assess the style of play, bring all of that into play, and then if you have a team like Huddersfield, you say, well, you're not receiving this amount of payment because ultimately you've come here for a free ride. You're a guy who just blagged your way in here. Enjoy the ride. You're going back home. You know, so I think maybe incentivising teams in that way may actually ask them to buck up their ideas a bit more.
Maybe I'm being a bit harsh, Marissa. Do you or does anybody think that the amount of crappy teams in the Premier League now is any less or more than it's always been? Have there always been like?
Is it maybe? But it's just it's all on TV now. It's all on social.
So you can see the rubbish now.
See it all. Maybe you can see it so much in the past when it's just the big teams on TV. Now you know you've got a game like Newcastle v Brighton. And you're like, oh god, what's that? And I mean, they're in the Premier League, yes, but Newcastle, okay, they're better than Brighton, but it's still not a match I would dedicate my time to. No. It'll be on in the background while I'm doing other things, but I'm not going to be watching that like I would Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, Spurs. You know, one of those kind
or
of games.
Or even a Watford, Bournemouth. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Watford,
I'd watch that. Yeah,
you know, like that FA Cup game. That was like, okay. I want to watch that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Brighton v Man City. Okay, it was only 1-0 to Man City, but we knew Man City were going to win it. Brighton just came not to lose. Mm. Hopefully, take it to extra time.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So those are games we don't really want to watch.
Think the plays out. And just finally, the thing that's more damning about Man United's draw, sorry, Mike, yesterday was that I was watching the game thinking, I just feel they're going to struggle in the Championship.
Yeah,
I really think they're going to struggle. It's not like, oh, they're a team that's not good enough for the Premier League, but they'll be one of the top three or four teams in the Championship. I could see them being mid-table in the Championship next year. That's how bad they are. And I think they need to be taught a lesson. Take some money away or something. Something. I mean, and you still couldn't beat them, by the way. But I'm just saying, like, you know what I mean? I just feel bad.
Jordan, I left that in the past. Like, yesterday. That was, yeah, it's a new day. It's Monday, you know. It's just move, you know. We move on.
You mentioned Sheffield United and Norwich. I mean, yeah. Norwich, when they went down last time, they went down not as bad as Huddersfield, but they went down with not much respect. Mm. What do we need to do to make sure the teams that do come up, and those two teams in particular, is there something, geez, maybe right, maybe there isn't an answer, but is there something that we can do to make sure that when you come to the Prem and you kind of get into that, the big money, there's an incentive to try and to win games? Or is it just a case of once you're giving the clubs the money, it's down to them what they do with it?
No, it's definitely down to them, because you can't control who they try to sign, what their manager wants to do with their team, all that kind of stuff. You know, when it comes to watching them play football, some of the teams that come up, like Wolves, you enjoy watching them because they have an intent to attack. They have an intent to try and win the games. If you come out and you just try to sit back and hope for 1-0 or draw 0-0 against a side because it's a good result for us and we need all the points, we need the magic 40 mark, whatever the hell that is, then that's boring. But we can't control what they do.
No.
It's impossible to.
Do you think going back to goal scored rather than goal difference might make it?
Maybe. Maybe. Mm.
Or head-to-heads as well, yeah. Like they're doing La Liga. Yeah. See, that's competitive because goal difference doesn't mean a thing unless the head-to-head is even.
Yeah.
Then it's like, okay,
yeah,
have you scored more? That's actually an exciting league because it gives you something to fight for. You have to go win games.
I hear that. All right, let's move forward now, guys. Let's talk now about young talent in the Premier League. How are Premier League clubs and managers doing when it comes to young talent in the league? Start with you, Basil. I've just got a list of some players here that are still relatively young and players that we've seen be on TV and they've been about for 2 or 3 years now. So I've got Sessegnon, Lascelles, Brooks, maybe not Brooks to be fair, Foden, Ake, Loftus-Cheek, Ali, Martial, Barkley, Hughes, Shaw, Bellerin, Gray, Richarlison. Of all those players, how many of those do you think in the last 2 or 3 years can you say have kicked on, have improved, and have been coached?
I think only Ali, if I'm being honest, out of that list. He seems to be the only person, because I think Pochettino is all dependent on the manager. Pochettino is very big on giving these youngsters an opportunity, sort of create an environment where they can come in, learn their trade, even make mistakes, and still have an opportunity to create a name for themselves in the team. Because I remember Foyth, I think his first two games he made mistakes, and I don't rate him that highly, but he's still got enough time to improve. But he's still in Poch's plans. He's still playing games. I think the other players, none of them have really kicked. I mean, Ake, for me, I never really thought he was.
I like Ake, you know.
I think he's all right. Mm. I never really saw him as a huge talent.
Okay.
If I'm being honest. And I think sometimes what we do in the Premier League is we mistake people coming in as an early age for talent. We see someone coming at 18 and immediately they're known as this big talent because they're playing at 18. No, they're broken through at 18. I mean, every footballer has to break in at some age. That doesn't mean you're as good as
you're a hot prospect.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think in England, we tend to throw that tag onto young players a lot rather than watching them develop and seeing how good they can be. I mean, like we were talking about Dele Alli. I mean, when he first broke in, that, oh, but Barcelona's and Real Madrid's of the world won him just because he was scoring goals at an early age. But I looked at him as that, like, he's still got a lot of developing to do before we can talk about him in that same bracket. I don't think managers these days are really coaching players as managers in the back in the day. I think all they're doing is really giving them, just giving them games and no real direction. I mean, Ruben Loftus-Cheek is another one. For me, I've always seen him as a talented individual, but even under Sarri, he's not really giving him the opportunities he warrants. Even someone like Hudson-Odoi, obviously, I think he's done well to play the amount of games he's played, but even in certain opportunities, certain games, he hasn't really been given the opportunity. And I think maybe that comes from the pressure that is coming from above onto these managers.
Possibly. Basil mentions G there, Loftus-Cheek and Hudson-Odoi. Something I think is interesting about Sarri and Chelsea and the young players that haven't got as much minutes as some people think they should have got is that you need to remember that because Sarri's Italian, young to Italian managers is 22, 23. Do you know what I mean? Whereas here we see young as like 17, 18, 19. Yeah. So in Sarri's mind, he may be thinking, you're years off, you know, breaking into this team. I see talent, but you're not... In Italy, that young for them is 21, 22.
Yeah.
So do you think that may be why he hasn't broken into him, or do you just think that he just doesn't particularly overly rate Hudson-Odoi?
Yeah, I think there is an element of, for me, the media catastrophizing these situations. I look at Callum's starts, and I actually think, well, okay, fair enough, they weren't all in the Premier League. But then if I compare that to Phil Foden, for instance, I think Phil Foden's had two starts. But there isn't the hoopla that there is when it comes to Callum. With Ruben as well, I think a lot, it hasn't been well reported, but he has this chronic back injury. And he's been injured several times this year. And it's kind of, so you go on BT Sport and Rio will always say, oh, Ruben's not getting any games. Every time Ruben got fit, he got an injury. I would say from the turn of the year, if Ruben was fit throughout, he would have displaced Barkley. But he's had so many injuries, and now the time that he finally is fit, he actually is getting a little bit of a run. So I think a bit much has been made of it. But yeah, you're right to a certain extent. I think Sarri comes in. I think Sarri thinks, well, I'm gonna pick the best team. One of his problems is he is quite rigid, and I wish he was a bit more flexible. He did rotate a squad, and maybe we wouldn't have some of the problems that we're having at the end of the season when you're seeing Kante picking up injuries, you're seeing, I forget our centre-back's name now, Rudiger's picking up injuries. Maybe if we rotated a bit earlier in the season, we wouldn't have them. But I do think because of Chelsea's history with young players, Sarri is getting a little bit of a bad rap, or Chelsea get a bad rap. If Jadon Sancho was Chelsea's player, could you imagine the noise that they would get? But because it's Pep, because it's the loving, he doesn't really get criticised in the same way.
Well, and also, do you think, just sticking on Sarri, do you also think that his mindset, again, being Italian, is, whereas we look at Poch and Spurs and have thought, yeah, the nucleus of their team the last two or three years have been young players. In Italy, again, the nucleus is always experienced pros, and then you might put in one or two talented prospects. So he's thinking, I need to get my Chelsea 11 or my Chelsea 8 or 9, solid pros that I know I can rely on, and then I might put a couple of players on top who are young, whereas we do it the other way around. We want to get all the young players in and then a couple of older experienced heads to kind of guide them.
Yes, exactly that. And also, bearing in mind as well that he wants to implement a style of play which is totally alien to what our players have been doing. So there have been times in the Europa League where people be like, oh, you could have gave a young player a game, or you could have gave Cahill a game, for instance. There's been a lot of talk about Cahill this week. But the truth is that I think some of those early Europa games, whereas a lot of managers would use them to rotate, he's used that to try to acclimatise the players
and
to the way
build he... A foundation
and to
a
build
team.
A foundation of where... I would hope that next season we'd see he withdraw from that a bit, because people are more used to it. And you've got to remember as well that he didn't have a pre-season because of all that stuff, that battle with Napoli, and we were holding on over 5 million and stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? All that kind of pettiness. So I would say I think he's been a little harshly treated, although you know me, I've criticised him on various occasions. I'll give him to next season, see how he gets on. But being a Chelsea manager and being Chelsea, there's always going to be that, until we have, you know, another John Terry or someone that's come through the ranks, there's always going to be that extra scrutiny on us that maybe isn't in other clubs.
I think it's also interesting you mentioned Foden too, because they seem to talk about Foden like he's this next generation talent. He's barely kicked a ball, had two starts, and people think he's developing. I don't see what development he's having.
But is the fact that he's not been playing 15, 20 games, is that not maybe their form of developing?
No,
you get a few games here, a few games there.
It's ridiculous because he plays like the last 6 minutes of a game. That's not development.
That's not development.
Yet somehow we've lauded him as the next big thing. And I was like, he's not kicking the ball and he has no intention of leaving City too, which is what I find weird, not even on a loan move.
No, but on that point, that's an interesting point because I wonder if the foreign managers, given 6 minutes at the end of a game when the game is pretty much won, if that is part of their coaching. I'm going to put you on the field when the game's won, get familiar with the game. There's less pressure on you to have to score a goal because the game's already won. Even if it, I remember Poch doing it with Winks and another young player as well a couple of years ago. They were only getting 2 minutes here, 3 minutes there, 2 minutes here. I was thinking, what's the point? But I think they're thinking, I want to just get you used to being in that environment with other pros and without the pressure of having to score that goal or stop a goal because the game's already won.
Winks is now a starter in the Spurs team. Foden, City are just going to buy new players. They bought Bernardo Silva in the summer. Look how he's performing. They're just going to sign more players in the summer. So he's just going to drop more and more down the pecking order. And I find it astonishing that as a player, the owner should be on you that, you know, I want to play more games. But he seems comfortable to just be sitting on that City bench. Yeah. He doesn't seem to even push for a low move. And I sometimes wonder, is his mentality really there to be at the top of the game?
I think he's a bit similar to Ruben in that, like, I think he's had this... I don't even think it's comfortable. I think it's like he's had this dream to play for City. And I think he's so determined to kind of follow through on that. He's saying, no, you know what? I'm not going to go out alone. I'm going to stay here and I want to make it in this team. Mm-hmm. And in some ways you admire the courage, but in other ways you've got to think, is this the best thing for your career? You could go away and City can come back and buy you for 250 million if they wanted to, you know?
Yeah, it's true.
So, yeah.
I think he's constantly being told he's the next best thing, that when David Silva retires, he's the next one. So if he keeps hearing that, he's thinking, well, I don't want to leave and miss my chance, even if it's on loan. Let's say David Silva gets injured for the season. That's Phil Foden's time to step in. If he's constantly being told he's the next one, then that's probably why he's hanging around. Like, yeah, I understand what you're saying about, like, you know, passion, determination. You want to be on the football pitch, come on now. But he's probably thinking, one day my chance will come. Yeah. That might be why he's hanging around.
I actually think Foden's a decent player. I've not seen, a bit like what you said earlier on, Basil, I've not seen this phenomenal talent that's going to be the next big thing. But I think he's a decent talent. I just wonder, I'm a believer in, I'm like you, I was playing double. I'm a believer in, give them minutes, let them play. But I'm just wondering if the continental managers see it the opposite way. It's not about him getting 30 minutes in a game. Our team Arsenal, we've seen the likes of Wiltshire, Ox, Ramsey at young ages, Gibbs, playing too many minutes and not feeling their potential because the pressure's on them. Whereas the opposite way is, I'm going to give you less minutes, but when there's no pressure, so you can, especially creative players, where you can express yourself in that last 5 or 6 minutes. One player I want to put to you, Mike, that I find interesting that kind of sums this up is Martial. Because he was a player that he was a player that for years at United, he was probably the only player that I would say I was jealous of. I really rated Martial. I thought, no, this kid could be. When he first came, his finishing, I just thought, was clean. For his age, his finishing was just so clean. He was quick. He was strong. He could beat a man. And I thought, this guy could be a problem. He's not kicked on. How much of that do you think is down to him? And how much of it is down to the fact that the four managers he's been there haven't coached him or, you know, yet developed him?
I think the tenure under Mourinho is what damaged him. Because I know Van Gaal was always someone that, no matter what club he was, that he was definitely about the youth, finding some gems. I mean, obviously at Barcelona and Ajax, he was blessed with so much talent. Whereas at United, I mean, we had Tyler Blackett, Borthwick Jackson, all these guys. These guys are not going to make it. Paddy McNair and all these guys there. So he spent, 60 million on this talent that he saw and said, this guy can do it. And
Jose?
No.
Oh, okay.
LVG.
Okay.
And can he give Fosu-Mensah his break to United, or was that?
He did give Fosu-Mensah his break, but I prefer he didn't.
Wow, you're just hurting.
No. I saw him at the season at Fulham, and I was disgusted. But anyway, with Martial, I think because the difference between LVG and Mourinho is that LVG knows how to coach these players, because his thing with youth players is that because he knew his football so well, they listened to him and he guided them. Whereas with Mourinho, it was sort of just like, whether I trust you or I don't. And, you know,
I don't think he trusted Martial enough, because before we signed Sanchez in that season, Martial was on form.
I was going to say, didn't Martial have, I think it was Josh, if this is wrong, he'll kill me, but I'm sure Josh said last week that Martial's best period this season was under, he's one of the few players that was performing for Jose Mourinho this season.
Yeah. I think he cut him at the wrong time, from what Josh was saying.
Mourinho cut Martial.
Cut Martial. Okay. Because there was a little run, I think he scored against us.
There was he had a good little 10 games.
And it was the same thing last season. We had, from August to December, he was on form, then he signed Sanchez and started to bench Martial. And for a player, I mean, if you feel like you've got all the trust of a manager, he brings in someone and all that trust just goes just like that. Because it wasn't just one game you dropped for, it was like 6, 7, 8. Then at some point, you sit there and you think, he doesn't want me. However, I feel like Martial also is a player that his mentality is quite weak.
I was going to ask, how much does he have to... You can't just blame on the manager. How much does he... Because if he's playing well and gets dropped... He's been dropped for a reason, and if there's no reaction, does that not come from him? Because I take your point that you need to feel like you're part of this team. When you're playing well, you're going to be brought in. But at some points, even as a youngster, especially as a youngster, you're going to be dropped. Mm. Is it then not about how that individual reacts?
That's how it's supposed to be. Because I mean, his mentality is quite weak. That's the issue with him. I feel like even in games when you watch him when he starts, if he likes to beat players, that's a dribble. He should usually either go in between dribbling or going in behind, but he likes to take the ball on and beat players. But if he can't beat his opponent within the first 10 minutes, he's done.
Mm.
And that's a mentality problem. And I think Mourinho also noticed that because there's been a couple of games in that run where I wouldn't say he played well, but he scored or he made an assist. Mm. But what happened was it would be in that one moment that he could do something.
Mm.
For the rest of the game, he did nothing. And that's why he'd score and still be taken off. Because Mourinho said it was a risk.
He's done nothing else apart from score that goal.
And that's the same thing with Memphis.
Yeah, but Jordan, would you say that's because we don't have coaches anymore? It's more just people to manage teams. Mm. Because someone like Martial, if it's a mentality thing, certain managers will be able to sort of take him aside and coach him. Fergie was good at doing that. Wenger was good at doing that in the past. So would you say it's more now because we've sort of gone in the other direction where... You know what, Sarri seems like someone who coaches players, but we know more overall we don't really have managers who coach players.
I'm not sure, you know. I think apart from the top six, who I do think have decent records, I mean, Solskjaer, we don't know, so he's maybe the anomaly, but the top five managers, I think, have all got records of developing players. I think it's the mid to lower end of the table. I mean, apart from Eddie Howe, I'm struggling, and this comes to my next point, with Rodgers at Leicester, I'm struggling to see many managers from 7th, 8th down that have got decent records of developing young players. Marco Silva, am I reaching there? Everton, possibly? Because I mentioned Richarlison earlier on. In the 2 years that he's been at Everton, I've not seen an improvement in him. Maybe 2 years is not a long enough time period to really judge a young player. But I've not seen... he's no worse than he was last year, but he's better.
I don't think he's developed him since he was at Watford. I think it's the same.
Same player, isn't he?
He has little spurts where you think he's coming along, and then he just dips for
a long period.
But I think it comes down, a lot of it comes down to man management, because you said Sir Alex Ferguson, he was a good coach, but it was also the way he could deal with players as people. Mm. You know what I mean? That helps you on the pitch.
And is that why Klopp, Pochettino, Pep Guardiola and Gareth Southgate are getting the best out of their young players because they know how to deal with young people.
That's exactly why, because they know how to talk to their players. They know, they find out their characters. With Mourinho, it was, you have to be this
do this
way.
My way.
It's warriors at Chelsea and at Inter Milan. It was perfect for him because he had his warriors.
Mm.
He had his guys that in Inter Milan, when he won the treble, everyone fit his mold. At Chelsea, you had Terry, Lampard, all these guys that fit their mold. They're the big men and they can do this and they can do that. At United, he didn't have that, and that's why he tried to usher out some players, bring in other guys, but obviously that was denied here and there. So with people like Martial, if he can't fix his mentality, he's not going to improve on the pitch. And off the pitch, I mean, his shenanigans are speaking for himself.
But even that, the coaching doesn't always have to come from the head coach or the manager.
No,
like
true.
The coaching team should be good, and I guess the appointments around that are quite really important as well.
I would argue, I mean, Fergie and Wenger may be anomalies. I think the coaching should more come from the coaching team.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
If you're a young player that's showing talent, the manager will have probably have the main team and doing drills and shape and all that sort of stuff. And you might pull away a Marshall or an Iwobi or a, I don't know, a Loftus Cheek and say, right, we're going to work on your movement off the ball. We're going to work on your finishing from the edge of the box.
That's what Arsenal had with Pat Rice. Pat Rice was loved for that because it wasn't only Wenger you could deal with. It was him, and he knew. And same thing United. Carlos Queiroz helped with Ronaldo, Anderson, Nani. Yeah. Other people, and then Rene Meulensteen did the same thing. So you had all these guys. That's what I loved about those two managers. It was that they could deal with you, but they also got people around you that had that same mindset to help you grow within the club. I feel like today, apart from maybe the three you've mentioned, I can't see anyone else that does that today.
And that's the thing. A lot of managers now will bring in, well, I don't even know if it's necessarily the managers. You look at Chelsea, like, so they've brought in Italian people who can work with Sarri. They've brought ex-players. So Zola and Cudicini. Who's to say that they're great coaches?
Mates, but crap coaches. Marissa, one manager I mentioned earlier on, Brendan Rodgers, he seems to have a decent record of improving young players. And he's at the ideal club because, you know, at Leicester they've got, you know, Madison, Gray, Chilwell, Barnes, if Tillemans stays, Chilwell, Choudhury, some good young players there. Do you feel that outside the top six, he's the best manager for next season in terms of developing young players? Because he did develop players at Liverpool, developed some young players at Celtic as well, and even at Swansea as well. Is he the epitome of someone that actually probably is more a coach than a manager?
Yeah, I would say so. I think the fact that players are playing so well now under him, even for these, you know, 7-8 games, will be a sign of next season to come. Maybe it's a bold prediction, but I would say they could make top six next season.
Okay.
If we look at top six this season and you see how they've been, they haven't exactly been, you know, lighting the place up. So Leicester, I think they've got a good squad there. Madison, Choudhury, Barnes, they're all good, young, hungry players who've got a lot of talent. And I think Rodgers knows how to manage them well. I mean, obviously, the defensive side is a completely different issue. That's his weak point, we'll say. But coaching the younger players, I think he's got something, you know, a bit of passion, a bit of direction for them, which, as you're saying, there's other managers that don't really have that.
And I actually think that he takes more pride in developing players than winning trophies. I don't know him, so I don't know that.
To have some young players to develop, he'll see that as more of a success for the season, maybe, than winning a trophy. Like, what's he going to win with Leicester? Maybe an FA Cup?
Yeah.
So, but developing some young players that could be at the club for the future. You know, a lot of clubs are more short-term. Like, we just want to win something now. But want to develop. Like, you know, like some men are having to keep buying players sort of every year because what they've got is not good enough. If he has a strong nucleus of young players that can be at Leicester for quite a few seasons, that would be something to shout about for, you know, future seasons.
I'm excited to see Gray under him because I've been saying for 2 or 3 years, I really like Gray. I feel he's maybe slightly plateaued a little bit in the last couple of years at Leicester. Yeah. I've wanted him at Arsenal, but I'd love to see if he can kick on next year under Rodgers. I like him, you know. I think he's a good winger. I think he's an old school winger. I like him. I just think he's plateaued a little bit.
No, but like, if you don't like Aubameyang, then boy.
Leicester also have another player who sort of, I have no idea what's happened to him. They have a player called Diabate.
Yes.
He looked very, very talented last season. Absolutely have no idea what on earth has happened to him now, whether it's an injury, whether he's on loan.
Yeah.
I looked at him and I thought when they were selling Mahrez, I thought, well, he looks ready-made to fill that position.
He looked very raw, but he looked like he had some potential.
I have no idea what's happened to him. But Leicester seemed to be going in the right direction in terms of having a group of young players where they'll be there for the next few years, where they don't have to spend a lot of money in long term, where they can sort of work on these guys and see where they take the club.
I think their only issue might potentially be under Rodgers that they might have too many young players in their team next year to the point where there's lots of talent and lots of energy, but not enough experience. I think he needs to get that balance of make sure that the whole team isn't under 23s. just finally, Michael, on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, there's some young players that you mentioned earlier on that are flitting around the United squad that clearly are going to be coming in to replace some of the players you've got in the first team now. How do you think he will manage those young players? And do you think he can achieve success next year, i.e. getting back into the top four, if he focuses on the young players you've got coming through? Or do you think that he needs to get some established pros in to get you back into that top four?
I think in terms of how he'll develop the young players, I think he'll do fine because his reputation stemmed from how he was, I think it was the reserves coach, but he started pulling up players from the under-18 straight away and helping them develop. And people like Pogba loved him when they were younger because he helped them get better as players.
Okay.
So in terms of his coaching,
was he in Solskjaer's team?
Yeah.
Back then, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in terms of his coaching on that level, I think he'll be fine in that sense. And when he went to Mulder, he won a league, mixing youth with experience. Mm. He got rid of plenty of people straight away, and brought in all these other guys, and he fitted them well. I know the league's obviously different way, different to Premier League, but he did what he needed to do to make sure they could win a title after a certain amount of years.
Mm.
So, I mean, minus Cardiff, he's been good.
Record's decent.
Yeah. But United, the thing is, he's got so much to get rid of that even if he brings in a couple of players, he's still going to have a lot of bad players around him. And there comes a time where you have to rotate. And if those bad players are still part of that squad, will you improve? I don't know. I think because of how shocking the race for the top four was this season, it was shocking.
Tottenham lost 13 games.
Exactly, you know.
No, that is bad.
You know, if you invest properly, then I think you are very much in the race for the top four. I don't think he's going to have a problem doing so. Because I feel like when he started off well, he got the players playing his way. But then what happened was, the players just, I actually can't explain it. It was off, you know. I mean, I was confused. I think it was the second game he won. He had Phil Jones doing a high press.
God, what is going on?
You know, and he drew past two players. What? So I was like, is this Ole? Really? I'm down for this. And then Phil Jones came back to Phil Jones. So I just think he has to invest properly and he has to invest in the right places. I mean, the one thing that gives me hope is that in the transfer, usually when transfers start to happen, with the rumours, we've always been linked with players in positions that we don't really need.
Mm.
Right now, we're being linked with players in the positions that we definitely need.
Okay. So, all right. We'll do a fantasy football update next week on the show because it's getting quite tight to the top of our,
thank goodness,
our fantasy league. So we'll announce our winner on next week's show. Let's finish now, guys, on Chelsea. And I'll ask the question, will Chelsea have the last laugh? So Chelsea have banked a Champions League spot for next season. Yeah. And G doesn't look too impressive. Should we give a round of applause? Give a round of applause. Well done, Chelsea.
We're not Arsenal. Don't do that.
Let me start with you. Have Chelsea had the last laugh? Because there was that middle part of the season where it was looking peak for you guys. It was on top. Even the Chelsea fans were turning. Sarri's a fraud. Sarri balls are nonsense. Jorginho in the middle was killing him.
Don't use your words,
Jordan. Don't
use your words.
All right, just me then. It was looking really, really bad. Do you feel that, you know, he's got to a League Cup final?
Mm-hmm.
Probably going to get to a UEFA Cup? Europa League final.
Yeah, respect the UEFA Cup. That was a good tournament.
And they'll probably still be favourites to win the Europa League.
Yeah.
And they've banged a top four spot. Are you feeling a little bit smug now, considering the heat that we're getting?
I'm not feeling smug at all. I don't take pleasure by winning by other people losing, basically. You know, obviously, I'm happy to be in the Champions League. If we finish above Tottenham, that's always a bonus. But we don't deserve to be in the Champions League. And more importantly, sometimes, like, you know, I was told that we were getting Sarri because it wasn't about what you do, it was about how you do it. And this season, how we've done it has been terrible.
Mm-hmm.
We've been awful to watch. You talked about value for money in Huddersfield. We'd get less money than Huddersfield at some point this season. We have been shocking to watch.
Yeah.
Week in, week out, same old, boring, 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 pass around the back. And people never, like, you know, people, I'm praying for long balls. Please just do one.
just get it in the mix.
Just go long. Get Giroud on and go long. So no, I just want the season to be over. You know, Europa League final, I guess, you know, fine. You know, it's a final, add some gloss to the season. But generally speaking, I just want to see what next season has. I'm still on the fence about Sarri. There has been points of this where I joined the F Sarri ball. but I'm willing to give him another chance. I think my thing is more about trying to find out what's happening with this transfer ban, if that goes through.
So on that, you've mentioned earlier on that you think, you know, you're glad you're in the Champions League.
Yeah.
But with Hazard going, I think we all know he's going.
Well,
he's going. And a possible transfer ban.
is being in the Champions League next year actually a good thing for you guys?
Yeah, I don't want to hear Europa League music.
Listen, on that, I was at the Emirates on Thursday, and they played this like crappy techno dance music, and I thought, how far have we fallen, man? Teams are coming out, and you're hearing this German techno, and I'm trying to get the fans pumped up, thinking, I miss Champions League music. Man.
Oh man, I tell you, watching Champions League, watch Liverpool, and I just feel jealous. I'm just sitting there. Birds.
But saying that, I mean, I said last week, and I got heat for it from the guys. I said last week that I don't want Champions League football next year because I don't think they're ready for it. Mm. I'd ask you the same question: are Chelsea, if there is a ban, if he can't buy any players, and Hazard goes, do you still want to be playing Barcelona and Real Madrid next year?
Let's fake it till we make it. There's so many players that we've got out alone. Let's just remember, you know, Batshuayi's playing Champions League. We can play for Champions League for Valencia. Right, fair enough. He didn't do too well. But like, you know, look, just put me in.
Just get you in there. Basil, what do you reckon? Do you think Chelsea have been the best of the bad bunch, or they've just been a bit lucky?
It's a catch 22 because, as Gabriel said, football wise, I've watched Chelsea and it has been dire at times. But at the same time, you can say they are the best of the bunch because they, as you mentioned earlier, they've got to a League Cup final, potentially Europa League final, and as bad as they've been in the season, third, which is an amazement themselves. And you compare it. I hate to bring Tottenham into this, but
you don't really, do you?
Across the pond, where they were eulogising over him, and look at where they're at now. Potentially out of the Champions League, lucky to finish in the top four, considering Arsenal more or less, you know, gave that to them.
More like they gave you a chance to catch me.
But they were 10 points ahead of us at one point, and they allowed Chelsea to overtake them, United and Arsenal to now be in touching distance. And yet, it could be another trophyless season for them, where they're finishing it behind the likes of Chelsea, who have been probably one of the worst seasons they've had in a very long time. But it shows you that, you know, I think Chelsea have done well to be where they are now. Nothing to really praise about, but I think they can be content with the fact that they're at the position they're at now compared to other managers where they were eulogising over and still haven't achieved anything close to what a Chelsea have achieved.
Do you think that Sarri is the man next year, your second year in the Prem, second year at Chelsea? You'd think he would get, well, if there's not a transfer ban, a couple more of his people in, and then are used to Sarri ball. Do you feel he is the guy to now make Chelsea a top four team again?
First of all, I'm happy he did Sarri ball like that.
Sarri ball's a myth. In fact, to be fair, no, I don't know why I did that. Sarri ball actually...
It's a myth.
Is it a myth?
I think it's a myth. I think it was solely based on BT Sport tweeting 30-second videos of them passing lovely balls around and then scoring a so-called sexy goal and then bottling the league. I'm just being honest. But no, you know what? Time is needed. I mean, if they do somehow get this ban delayed or just get it taken away, this summer is huge for Chelsea because I felt like there was a big noise for me over nothing of considering Jorginho and Kante when the real problem was, is it going to be Barkley? Is it going to be Kovacic? Is it going to be Barkley this week? Who am I subbing off this week? Is it going to be you? I thought that was the bigger problem because that third person made Chelsea's midfield so weak. You've got one person that can sort of break up play passes around, and you've got Kante who is just world class. And you have this position here, which is a problem because you've got two players, one that's supposed to be really good but seriously underachieving in Kovacic.
Okay.
And Barkley being the other one. So the summer's big. If he's going to be the right man, if they can delay the ban, just give him the players that he needs. And then I'll judge him.
Is the elephant in the room is to this whole Abramovich situation whereby we don't know how interested he still is in the club. You know, if Chelsea do get a ban and they can't bring in any players, you know, does he just think, oh, sod this is long?
Or, that's what you're hoping for.
Well, that's what... I am. But even if my hopes aside, is it still concerning for Chelsea the fact that their owner can't engage with the club, not only politically, but potentially in a football sense as well? And that could dictate this summer and next season and how well they do.
Now, where is Roman? Where is he? We don't know.
He's on the yacht somewhere.
Living his best life.
Where's Wally or something?
You know, if he can't engage again, how how difficult a year with a transfer ban and losing their best player could it be for Chelsea?
Yeah, because you just don't know what's going on, who's in charge. That Marina Gariscard, she's in charge, but of what, really? Because if they're not signing any players, the young players, we know Sarri isn't really keen on the young players. So what happened? You just got all these young players back. Where are they fitting in the team? Are they just all going to be on the bench? Mm. Going to be the exact same team we've had this season, which, as we say, just about scraped top four. So there's nothing to shout about. It just seems a bit of a, you know, a bit of a mismatch there. Like, they stopped building the stadium. You know, they're going to extend Stamford Bridge. Or that's not happening now. You know, that's supposed to be a big deal.
But could a transfer ban actually, in some ways, help Sarri? Because then there's no pressure to sign players. He's got the squad kind of that he wants. He's got four or five of his guys in. Could it, in a really weird way, help him?
Well, I think he's stubborn, though, isn't he? If the press keep, you know, like they've done with Loftus-Cheek and with Hudson-Odoi, you need to play these players. He'll just dig his heels and go, no, I'm not playing them.
Yeah.
So it could be they get back there and they're just sat on the bench. So it depends how he plays. If he wants to be flexible, be more adaptable, which is really what you need to be in the Premier League, then it could work. But if he just wants to keep the same players that he's had that are not doing that well, but just about managed to get into top four this season because of other teams' failings, then it might be another, maybe they might finish fifth or sixth next season.
Indeed.
Which, of course, is going to be even more calls of F. Sarri ball, get this man out of my club, can't be having this anymore,
and
then
top.
More upheaval.
Just final point, Gabriel. Do you feel the fan base will chase him out eventually, like they did with Benitez? Because they're not having him. Do you feel, despite Benitez winning two trophies, or was it one?
Benitez had seven trophies he could have won, yeah? let's not start a pity party for Benitez over there.
Fan base, when they turn on the guy, they turn on the guy.
No, but Benitez, we never wanted it from the beginning. True. So it was no turning, it was just straight. There were banners up about Benitez before he signed.
But how much patience do you feel the Chelsea fan base have with Sarri?
I think there need to be almost instant improvement next year. Not even necessarily in terms of we have to be top or the football would need to improve. There would need to be positive momentum from him. And I think if there wasn't, by Christmas time, it could get messy. The F. Sarri balls would get louder. and maybe he could be gone. But I got to a point in the season, probably actually down in Cardiff when we were losing 1-0, and I thought, you know what, this is it. It's brought me back from the brink. And I'm willing to give him another chance. I just say, look, let's just get behind him, give him a chance. It's like, we've always played the counter-attacking football. This was always going to be a hard transition under difficult circumstances as well. Let's give the guy a chance. And if not, by December, let's get someone else.
Happy day. But in fairness, at least you know he has support in the Cardiff fans. We were trying him that. Do you want to keep Sarri when they're supposed
to be with? That's the thing. There isn't an ultimate. Maybe we'll do Zola at the World.
Love it, guys. Thanks for coming on the pod this week. Let's all just pray collectively that this time next week Liverpool are not champions of the Premier League.
Amen.
And City get the job done. Don't forget to subscribe to us on our channel. We are on iTunes, we're on Spotify as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Marissa, Mike, Basil and G Chiefs for coming on this week. Until next week, peace.